another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Well, folks, we have another really good podcast today. Sometimes we bring Gemma Jones on, and sometimes she's a host. We work a lot with Gemma, and sometimes she's a guest. And today, we're going to put her back in the guest seat. But I think today's conversation is going to be really good. We're going to be talking about the block diagram, But before we jump right into that, Gemma, if you would, even though many people know about you, if you would tell our audience a little bit about yourself, about your background, and then if you would tell us, what is a block diagram?
Cool. Hi, I'm Gemma. I'm an improvement coach and trainer based in the UK, but I'm lucky enough to get to work with people all over the globe, including the team at Baptist. My background was originally engineering and continuous improvement, but for the last 6 years, my practice is almost entirely CATA coaching and training people to be CATA coaches. So what's a block diagram? We use block diagrams in CATA to show how a process is working, to show the operating pattern, the steps of a process. We use it to visualize that process. So it's literally a set of blocks running from left to right, with that sort of visually portrays the sequence of steps. And each block is a step in that process. And we add other details as appropriate, sort of above and below the blocks. But yeah, it's a diagram that visualizes a process.
Hey, Gemma, I think this is such an important topic because we often assume we know what's happening in the process. But when I think about a block diagram, I often think about process mapping, which is another kind of tool that is often used. Can you describe the difference or the similarities between process mapping and what you describe as block diagram?
Okay, so I think a block diagram is just a very simplified form of process mapping. I'm a huge fan of process mapping, been doing it for 25 years in my roles in continuous improvement. And the block diagram is just a very simplified version of that. You can do it on a single sheet of paper. You don't need a whole wall to do it. We ideally want to be focusing on part of the process. So we're not focusing on an enormous, you know, process of operations. We're focusing on something fairly small, and we can document that on a sheet of paper. I should say this is different to the, you know, some people, if they're in software development or in electronic engineering, they use a different form of block diagrams. It looks slightly different. They're much higher level and they don't show detail. What we're using block diagrams for is to show a lot of detail.
But for a very magnified version or a very small piece of a much bigger process sometimes.
Often, yeah, often. Now, sometimes you'll change that level of magnification. You know, there might be parts of the process that you don't need to go into, like zoom into in so much detail. But, you know, often we do. So that level of magnification can change in the block diagram. Some steps will be in a lot greater detail. We really show the critical parts in a lot of detail.
So this is something, it's a topic that I think about a lot today because, again, in the complexity of our space in healthcare, there's so many different processes. And I think there's so many assumptions that we bring into what's actually happening. So I think I'm surprised still today of how few times we actually have a visualized block diagram. It seems so simple, yet there's so much here that can really help us improve. Gemma, what have you seen in your coaching about the importance of this piece?
This is so important. This is a critical part, you know, of analyzing a process and trying to make improvement. Because just like you say, we make so many assumptions about how a process works. Maybe I've worked in that process. I've done that operation for a year, 5 years, 25 years. My ego tells me I kind of know what's going on because I'm the expert. I'm the one who's on the front line. I'm the one, you know, doing those things. I think I know what's happening. Now, almost every single time a learner draws a block diagram, there's some kind of discovery of something that's a surprise, something that they did not know was happening, or some kind of connection between different parts of that process, or some kind of thing. Often people are saying, oh, I thought that was the other way around. I thought that thing happened and then that thing happened. there's always discovery to be made. And the other thing I want to say there is, if we're using this, you know, this tool, this tool of a block diagram in CATA, we have a learner when they're grasping their current condition, we ask them to do multiple block diagrams. So my general rule is I want you to watch that process 10 times. And 10 is just a number that's plucked out of the air. Sometimes it needs to be 12, 15, sometimes it's 8. But I want you to look at that process multiple times and look for the variation, because there's always variation, because we're humans and we find ways around things, and there's other people involved and there's other things involved in different times of day. So we do it multiple times with as much detail, and then we stand back and we look at them all.
Yeah,
really good. Really good. So I've got a question there. I think about this a lot, so I'd like to see if you can help bring clarity for me, Gemma, is, you know, in the world of sports, you used when you talked about the operating pattern when explaining the block diagram, it made me think of our mutual friend, Mark Rosenthal, and how he always likes to say, this is how we're playing the game, right? And then my mind automatically goes to these sports talk shows. There is a multi-billion dollar industry, whether it be the football of the UK or whether it be the football of the United States or all the other sports. There's literally people that do nothing but all day long talk about how people are playing the game. And then they will inevitably start drawing X's and O's up on some kind of digital or physical board. And they'll start drawing pictures of how people are playing the game. And so it seems like it's so built into our culture to do that around the world. But when we come to work, somehow we completely separate that line of thinking. What are your thoughts on that? Because I've always found that to be fascinating, that we spend all this money, all this time, all this energy outside of work, analyzing things that we love, sports and how we're playing the game. And sometimes we get down to the very detail, but then when we come to work, we completely separate our thinking. Have you ever given that much thought?
Well, and I wonder whether that's something to do with the fact that it's about us and it's about our work, and that's very personal. This isn't, you know, somebody playing a sport or a team playing a sport. This is me and how I'm performing my job. And I know that there's expectations about how I do that job. There might even be standard operating procedures or SOPs. You know, I may be, there may be regulatory, and there's like expectations and rules about how I do things. And you know what? If someone comes and studies what I'm doing, maybe I'm, you know, I found some shortcuts. I'm not doing it the way maybe I'm supposed to do or I'm expected to do. So I wonder if there's a bit of ego there involved in analyzing the way I operate. And there's a bit of hesitation, maybe. I know I would probably be hesitant, you know, I mean, before I'd practice CATA to the extent that I have, where I'm kind of happy to see where things aren't how they're expected to be. But yeah, I wonder if it's something wrapped up in that.
Yeah, so something else that we've been thinking a lot about at Baptist and talking a lot about, even with you, Gemma, and so for our audience, you know, Gemma is, Skip mentioned it, but we get to talk a lot to Gemma about different projects, and it's always super insightful. We're super grateful for your leadership and what you do in this space. But I'm thinking a lot about daily management and how this piece, and it's really the book that we've been talking about. We had the authors on the podcast, but actually creating a block diagram of a process is actually a key piece of continuous improvement. And so have you, Gemma, have you seen that connection, and how do you make sure that this is embedded in improvement work?
Okay, great question. You know, obviously the block diagrams are something we use heavily in the practice of CATA. So if I'm coaching someone, you know, they're probably over the course of if they were doing an 8-week challenge, they would probably make 30 or 40 different block diagrams, maybe even more. So they're getting lots of practice of recording, observing, you know, lots of detail about a process, really getting deep understanding. But you can also use block diagrams outside of CATA. And naturally, you build that habit in the practice. You then also start to automatically use that tool outside. So I think I joke about the fact that I think in block diagrams, and I think I do. I've always, you know, I'm an engineer.
Me too.
I I used to think I thought in process maps, and now I think in block diagrams. And if I've got to write instructions to someone, you know, whether that be my husband or my kids, you know, they're very used to being handed a piece of paper with a block diagram on, you know, of something that I need to explain to them how to do. So I think this is a habit, a skill, a tool that we can use to apply elsewhere. And it's really powerful to use as a communication method within a team or, you know, between teams. This is the way we operate our daily meeting. You know, we have I do a couple of different weekly meetings where we have a block diagram for the meeting that shows very clearly the different steps of the agenda, who's going to do what timings, you know, all of those things. So I absolutely believe it's a skill and a tool we can use in many other places.
Let me ask you a question, Jim. You know, as you know, we very much embrace the Shingo model here. And, you know, and as the old saying goes, all models are wrong, but some are useful. And so we think it's useful. And one of the things that the model argues is that systems drive a set of behaviors, and then those behaviors influence the results. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Because as long as you have human beings out there running these operations, then they're going to have behaviors. And you were one of the very first people I ever heard of when talking about the block diagram, also talk about the behaviors. And I say that because sometimes I find that some people will make the block diagram almost too quickly and too straightforward. They'll just block, block, block. Here you go, Skip. But reality is that we have humans that are running these processes. How do you think about, as you're observing that process or that work, how do you think about also observing and understanding some of the behaviors connected to that work?
Cool. So one of the things we can add to a block diagram, you've got the blocks with the steps in running left to right. We can also add something called process characteristics. So I like to train people to add those below the blocks. These are like other details we've observed in that operating pattern. And it's really prompting people to look for extra detail. And one of those extra details we can add is absolutely behaviors. So we can see, you know, how someone's done something, what kind of behaviors they've exhibited, different things you've observed. And I like to think of this as almost different layers, sort of layering other bits of information on top of the block diagram. A very basic block diagram is just going to show the steps. Then you've got another layer of perhaps time. You know, if time is a really important thing, maybe speed or pace is important to this process, you might add those. I like to add them at the top, either the time it happened or the time it took for that step. And then you can add the process characteristics. I like to add them underneath. You might also add, like, if there's different people involved, and again, they may have different behaviors, you may see different things. And then I also like to go one step more and encourage people to add feelings into those process characteristics as well, you know, which can be for some people a bit of a surprise. And sometimes we just talk about maybe emojis. You know, they've got a phone in their pocket, probably they can pick out an emoji that best fits how they're feeling. If you can try to get people to think about behaviors, about feelings, about each of those steps in a block diagram, I think of it as we're getting, you know, more layers of information, a greater depth of understanding as to what's going on. Because those behaviors that are happening at different times might tell us something really important about the process. Those feelings that the person running that process has at different times might tell us something really interesting about what's going on.
Love the concept of layers, Gemma, that you're talking about, and keeping something simple. Also, the reality that we face all the time is the complexity of our work. And the number of different variations, be it people or shift or time of day or what's going on the floor that day or what's happening in the unit. And so how do you balance and it may be in the layers, but I want you to speak to the balance between keeping something simple and having it that you know is super complex. And it's probably way more complex than you can ever get on a one page.
I think there's a real art to the block diagram. And if I'm working with a brand new learner, then I'm going to, you know, it's going to be fairly simple. It's probably not going to have great detail in the process characteristics, but I'm going to look to build that up over time. So I'm not expecting a brand new learner to go in, you know, all the way with all the details and all the complexity. But I am going to try and build that up. But I think part of the art is in being concise, yet still specific. So, you know, some people can write, you know, the details of a step and, you know, take 500 words and it takes a lot more time. There's that famous quote about writing, you know, something shorter takes a lot more time. But, you know, someone else can write that same thing in maybe 10 words or 20 words. And I think there's a real art to that. And that's a skill we can learn. And that's part of our responsibility as coaches to teach that skill of, you know, being specific in the detail and showing that that level of complexity, yet still being concise and not being overwhelmed with words.
And it turns out that takes a lot of practice, right?
It takes a lot of practice. It is a skill. And it is something you can learn. If you've got a good coach, they're going to teach you how to do a really, really good block diagram, which is complex, which shows some of the complexity, yet which we can still stand in front of a board and we can easily see how the process works now.
Yeah. You know, Skip, connecting it back to your comment to sports, I mean, I think the analogy holds, which is, you know, we forget that we need to practice skills that we want to be good at. And these are ways, and these are simple tools that can really transform work units, can really transform teams by the opportunity to all get to the same page, to create a process that actually yields the result that we want to see, that we want to have in a sustainable fashion. So I really love this dialogue.
Well, you know, I was thinking, it's funny because I was driving in this morning listening to a podcast, and a gentleman made a statement just in passing. He said, yeah, we always hear that practice makes perfect, but also practice makes permanent, you know. And I thought it's a really good comment because, you know, sometimes we indirectly are practicing something that maybe isn't our best, right? And we see these very complex processes where we wonder why there's high turnover in certain disciplines. And it's almost like we've just surrendered to say, well, that's just the way it is. I'm not so sure that's the case. I'm not so sure that we haven't thrown people into chaos. And we've never really, from a block diagram perspective, really said, wait a minute, how should this game be being played? How should people's different roles being played? Because we've all seen, you know, things that are of beauty, right? If you ever go to a symphony, I think recently you were at a symphony, you know, Gemma, and it's beautiful, right? Because the handing off of the baton, the choreography, it's just so beautiful. Well, that didn't happen by mistake. That all was practiced and it was thought out. And the thing that's beautiful, as you know, another quote from our friend Mark Rosenthal about how ink makes you think. When you draw out that picture, if you're coaching me, Gemma, and I have to show you my thinking on a piece of paper, most likely I'm not going to come out of the gate batting 1,000. Most likely you're going to be asking me a bunch of questions. Well, Skip, what kind of behaviors did you notice? Skip, well, I mean, there's all kinds of questions that most likely is going to take me and my piece of paper back to the process to observe again. Am I thinking about that right?
And I think it's mindset too. So many, you know, I'm hoping that there's listeners out there today at Baptist or in healthcare that we've piqued their interest, you know, and again, I think that this is a mindset shift of, this is not something that you do once and like say it's complete. This is where the terms continuous improvement or process improvement come into play, because these are continual things you have to come back to. And this is where there's power in daily management as well, you know, for small groups. And so, Gemma, I'm hopeing, like I said, that there's somebody out there listening to the podcast that's like, man, I got to do this. So how do they start? And how do they not only start, but how do they continue?
Okay. So, like I said, I think this can be used by someone even if they're not practicing kata. So I'm going to make the assumption that somebody who wants to get going and use block diagrams is not, you know, has not got a kata coach, is not in that sort of field of work. But you can still use a block diagram. So let's say you've got a process that you want to improve, spend some time studying it, you know, draw some block. And it's simple. It's as simple as a sheet of paper, maybe a bigger sheet of paper, like 11 by 17, you know, and a nice, decent sized piece of paper, and just start making notes and observe a process. Now, if you're in a situation where you can video that process, that's that can actually work really well. Obviously, in healthcare, that's tricky, and we can't do that if there's patients around and people around. So if you can't video it, maybe have multiple people observing so you can each take notes, because you're going to miss stuff. If you're watching it in real time and you can only watch it once live, you're going to miss details. So maybe get a few other people. But document that process. And I'd say actually the thing I want to say first that you should do first is define the beginning and end of the process you want to record or that you want to document. So be really clear about, you know, we're studying this process from, you know, maybe when the nurse does this to when the nurse does this. You know, you're very clear on start and finish, and then start documenting the block diagram. If you can add timings, add timings. If you can add, you know, behaviors and feelings like we talked about, but record as much information as you can. Now, it's going to get super messy on your page, so you're probably going to want to redraw it after you've done, because you've missed things and you've got arrows all over the place. But once you've done that first version, that's not the end, that's just the beginning. You then got to go and do, you know, try and observe that process as many times as you can, 10, 12 times, and with different people, different times of day, till you've got a really good deep understanding. And once you've got your, that's called the actual operating pattern, because that's what's actually happening right now, you can then start to design what we call the desired operating pattern. So you can design how you want it to work. And you take those 10 or 12 versions that you've seen and you think about, you know, which bits worked well, which bits there was, you know, it was a bit more messy, which bit there was seemed to be issues. And you get the chance to design your ideal way of that process working. Now, the first time you do that is probably not going to be right. You're probably going to need a few iterations. And that's the beauty of the practice of kata. You get to do multiple target conditions. But even if you're not doing that, you can think about how you want it to go and then work towards that, experiment towards that. But give yourself a time limit, because that first draft, that first design is probably not going to be the best or the full answer. But you're going to learn more. Every time you document a block diagram, you're going to learn more about how it works, and you're going to get be in a better position to design the optimum kind of future state.
So speaking to the leader that has too many meetings on their calendar this week, and they don't really have a kata coach, and they're not sure, but they really like what you're saying. Not only, I think you've articulated well how to start, and I think that's great. What is the cadence or the process that they should consider for how to sustain something like this?
So, you know, I'm always going to say it's best to observe and look at a process and take steps every day. You're going to build a skill. If you want to build muscles and skill, you need to go to the gym, you know, multiple times a week, not once a week or once a month. So I would say try and clear 10, 15 minutes in your schedule to go and observe a process and try and do it daily. I know that, you know, for some people that's unrealistic. I mean, I challenge them on that. And I'd say maybe observe your day as a block diagram and see where you can find some space in your own day. But that's another story. So yeah, the more frequently, the better. Obviously, it depends on the context and the process. If that is a very small process that happens multiple times a day, you know, maybe it's involving patients or a particular procedure, you could probably do 10 observations in 1 hour. You know, maybe slightly longer or slightly less, but you could go and do those multiple observations in one block. If it's a different process, maybe you can only observe it once per day. But the frequency is what matters here in terms of seeing the process for what it really is and how it's really working and seeing the variation, and also building that skill in yourself to be able to make that observation and create that block diagram at speed, you know, because I think this is a skill.
Okay, so let me throw a curve at you, Gemma. Many jobs, both at Baptist and, you know, in a lot of industries, they're not necessarily directly interacting with other people. They actually sit behind a computer all day. Now, I guess they might interact with other people on the phone, but you see where I'm going with this, whether you're talking about accounting or whether you're talking the world of credentialing or whatever it may be. You know, really important professionals are sitting behind a phone, behind a computer all day, every day. And they may even know that the processes that they're working in are flawed. How might they use the block diagram to start a conversation, maybe even with their boss or with one of their colleagues?
Awesome. Awesome question. So in that instance, I would recommend finding a friend, a colleague, to come and sit by you. And I've done this before with teams in the finance team or, you know, in supply chain or in HR, where their job is purely in front of a computer, in front of a screen. Get someone to come and sit by you and get them to document the block diagram. So you run your process talking about what you're doing, because there's lots of thoughts in your head that you're probably not aware of. Talk it through and have them record that block diagram. And again, almost every time I do this with people, there's a surprise where they say, gosh, look at that, you know, 25 keystrokes to send one invoice, or, you know, it takes me 17 minutes to do that one thing. It used to only take me 3. I didn't realize, you know, there's always some discovery and some kind of interesting, you know, thing to learn just from observing that process. But I think the key when you're sat in front of a computer is to have somebody else to do it with you. Because you, if you're breaking from the process to make a note by yourself, that means the process isn't running how it normally would. And yeah, so having someone else there to do it.
Yeah, I love that though, because you're not just staying involved, you're also collaborating with a colleague.
Exactly.
That builds mutual trust and respect for a process that many people are having to use. And we all, again, we all bring the assumption that we know what's happening. So
yeah,
I love how you've articulated these aha moments that happen almost every time you do this. And I've experienced the same thing. It's because we're as humans, we just have so many assumptions about what we think is occurring. And so to get to the same page with a simple block diagram is very, very powerful. I love the examples of, you know, all of the different areas. And, you know, for anybody that's just installed brand new software, those are great opportunities to really focus on new processes and think about how we can improve those for the long term.
Definitely, definitely. New software or new people. You know, if we've got somebody new into a role and we're training them how to do that role, this can be a really good opportunity to communicate, you know, these are the steps of the process that we need to follow to, you know, to create that work or make that thing.
Okay, so one final question as we kind of bring the podcast to an end is, when you think about the work you do, whether you were coaching someone, whether it was a interaction with your husband or your sons, or whether it was you personally, over the last year, you used the word surprise several times there, Gemma. Is there a block diagram that maybe you made or maybe someone you were coaching that you were really surprised about in the last year, that there was a discovery, I didn't expect to see that?
Nothing like putting your good friend on the spot, Skip, right?
Okay. Could have done with some chance to think about this, Skip. So the one that comes to mind, I think, in terms of, because it was mine and I created it. So I did a challenge last year around running, because I've never been a runner. You know, everyone has always laughed at the way, you know, that I run. You know, I just truly believed from school, like I truly believed I was not a runner. And I started working with a PT last year and she put me on a treadmill and I was like, no, I don't know if you know, but I can't actually run. And she's like, yeah, you can. So she got me running on a treadmill and then I decided to do a challenge in order to be able to run a 5K. And so I was doing block diagrams. You know, I'd get home from the gym and I would do my block diagram in terms of what I didn't actually do it in the gym, because that even for me would be extreme. But I would get home and do my block diagram. Now, it included, you know, the run in. So it's stretching that I was doing and then also the running. But there was all sorts of things that I learned about my process that I was following just on the treadmill in terms of. So this is a silly example, but I was wearing headphones to listen to music because I just can't run without music. And my hair kept coming out. I kept moving my hair back behind my ear and I was knocking the headphones, which would stop the music, which then would mean I'd have to get my phone, which would mean I'd have to slow the treadmill down. And then I'd have to get my phone to turn the music on again. So now I originally thought this is about my hair. Actually, it was also about the headphones. And so there was various different solutions and obstacles that, you know, that I overcame. But had I not been writing it out as a block diagram, I wouldn't have seen that level of detail, and I wouldn't have seen what was actually happening in that process.
Gemma, that's a great example.
What a great example. Yeah. That's a real good example. Well, Gemma, thank you so much. As always, I know we're very spoiled. We get to talk to you on a pretty consistent basis. But that was actually a really good example about bringing what I call the invisible, making it more visible, being able to see, getting it worked out in our mind as we write it down. And so thank you so much, Gemma, for everything you do. We're so grateful for you. And so on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, just thank you. As you know, we will ask you to come back again and again and again. So until the next time, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for having me.